Welcome to Peter Report, readers and listeners. Thought I'd try to come up with a new intro to this show. I have nothing, so we're just going to go with what we've always done.
You did well last week.
I don't remember it. That's the problem. But anyway,
I'm
trying to help you out.
I'm Mark Cook, along with Scott Reynolds, our publisher, and Trevor Sikkema,
present.
Our beat writer. Sikkema.
Hello.
Sikkema.
Hello.
Say present, please.
Present.
Roll call. And we are going to talk some Buccaneer football like we do every single week, sometimes twice a week. And we have had, listen, let's face it, guys, the grind of camp. Dirk talked about it on Wednesday.
I'm talking about it today.
Yeah, that's Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
You know,
you're
but
right.
Anyway, don't mess up my timing here. But yes, he talked about it on Wednesday, Trevor, because some people aren't listening to this
before
today.
The podcast, you didn't know when the first practice was, so it's okay.
That's true. But Dirk talked about it. He said, you know, the grind is getting to these guys. It was not a good practice today. We saw it on Hard Knocks last night,
yep.
Which would be Tuesday night, Trevor. And Dirk talked about it. I mean, it's just these guys are struggling. I talked to Chris Conte. We'll have that in the training camp diary for later. But, you know, he said it's a grind. It's a grind for all of us. We're looking forward to a little break in the monotony ourselves.
Yeah.
But this week, it just hasn't been very good.
Well, and also, too, like Dirk said, and Trevor, this is really for you because you're still in your rookie season with PeterReport.com,
mm-hmm.
is however tired you are right now, you can double that, and that's how it's going to be in Miami, yeah. In the air-conditioned press box come 1 o'clock.
That's right.
I was going to say,
letting you know right
probably
now.
Gonna be decently easy for us.
You know, you
we
guys,
just get to drive to Miami.
And by the way, Peter Report will be in Miami for that game and other road games this
on
year.
Site.
But I'm just disappointed that you guys are going to make it a one weekend trip. It's Miami. I would go up the week before, South Beach.
We have all to work, man.
That's what nighttime is for.
You say the
for.
Week before, they're going to have open locker room and stories to write and news to break. And
I can Miami. Cover it. You guys take care of Miami.
Okay.
Put a Peter Report
well,
stamp on it.
All right.
Sounds good.
Fab 5 that week coming from Mark. Cover
yeah.
3 coming from Mark.
Exactly. Yeah, no. Yeah. It's just been a long training camp, and it's showing out there. Guys are dragging a little bit. I mean, Dirk had these guys running gassers over the weekend. Something kind of new for him and for this organization that we haven't seen in a long time, since maybe going all the way back to the Ray Perkin days.
No. I will say, going back to Les Steckel, his 1 year in Tampa.
Oh, wow.
When he had
former Marine.
Former Marine. He had the penalty path. You jumped off sides, you had to run a lap, just like in high school or pop Warner.
Wow.
What?
Yes. It was called the penalty path.
What?
There was a time when Mike Allstott jumped off sides and had a little flinch.
And he made him run?
And he made the A-train do a lap. Yep, in practice.
Wow.
It was called the penalty path.
That's
and I'll tell
so
you what,
weird.
It worked because the Buccaneers had an awful lot of offensive penalties the year prior to Les Steckel. And the year that they got there, you know, with Steckel, the penalties dropped. So maybe Dirk's onto something here by having these guys do some wind sprints and some gassers for those false starts and illegal formations and all those pre-snap penalties.
Accountability. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, and I don't think that these guys are getting, you know, full of themselves by any stretch or overconfident. Because I'll be honest with you, I'll say this, and Trevor will probably agree with this. I thought maybe last week in Jacksonville, maybe that had set in a little bit, because Jacksonville was the hungrier team on that first day of practice on that Monday, and the Buccaneers looked like they didn't want to be there.
Well, except for the defense. We saw in Hard Knocks just how dominant the Bucs defensive line was.
Look, Hard Knocks does a good job of making a good story. Yes, because Monday, now granted, from where the media was allowed to be and where the defense was, we didn't see a whole lot there.
That's what I'm saying.
But all of those one-on-one battles, that was the second day.
Was it?
Well, I guess they might have had them both days, but the one where Noah Spence, you know, went outside and spun inside, and the Chris Baker ones, those happened on Wednesday. I mean, on Tuesday, because I taped and tweeted those out.
They had, you know, full pads on too.
Yeah,
so that had to have been Tuesday.
Yeah, that's true. But bottom line is I was a little concerned maybe that this team, you know, was getting kind of full, but they turned it on.
Yeah,
they were able to, when the game started, they were able to flip that switch. And I don't know if that's good or bad.
Right.
You know, I guess it's better than the other way,
mm-hmm.
than to not have any confidence and walk out on a football field. And that's something that we've talked about over the last few years. And Dirk talked about it, you know, changing the culture of this football team. Mm-hmm. And Jameis has talked about it. Expecting to win versus hoping not to lose.
Right.
And I think they go into this year – walking out on the field, including that Thursday night against the Patriots, with the confidence that they expect to win a football game.
I'll tell you what, when you looked at Hard Knocks last night and you saw Jameis's leadership, I mean, he was telling Cepho, he was telling Peyton Barber, you know, hey, this is practice. We need to win practice. This is not just, oh, it's practice. Right. This is, you need to win.
Yeah.
You're competing every single time you're on the field, whether it's against the Jaguars in practice or against your teammates. You have to compete. And that type of eye of the tiger mentality is just awesome to see from Jameis Winston. When this guy elevates his play to the elite level, and I think he will, I think he is destined to be an elite quarterback in this league. This team, when I was looking at the draft, and you just saw two really good quarterbacks, Winston and Marcus Mariota. I looked at those two guys, and Winston to me was Michael Jordan. He was a guy that was great, but he also could elevate the play of those around him. He could make Tony Kukoc better. He could make Scottie Pippen, you know, Kerr.
Scott Skiles.
Yeah, he could make all those guys around him better. Horace Grant. But when you look at Mariota, he was a great player in his own right at Oregon, but it seemed to me he was more like Kobe Bryant, where Kobe's going to get his, but I don't know that Kobe was the type of player that would elevate those players around him to greatness. I remember John Elway, you know, before he had Terrell Davis, back when he was younger, you know, who were his receivers? I mean, he had a cast of no-name receivers, Ricky Natil, you know, some of those guys that were not Pro Bowl receivers by any means, but Elway was good enough to make those guys around him great.
Well, a perfect example of that is Tom Brady. Look at the receivers this guy's thrown to the last few years. Yeah. I mean, I'll be perfectly honest with you. When the Super Bowl
happened, aside from Randy Moss.
And he had Randy Moss there for a little bit, but for the most part,
Danny Amendola.
You know, these guys.
Wes Welker.
Right. That he just
Julian
makes
Edelman.
Better. There was a guy in the Super Bowl. I can't remember his name. The wide
Mitchell,
receiver.
The rookie.
Yeah. I didn't even know who this guy was before the Super Bowl started. You know what I mean? And he's running down the field catching dimes from Brady. But Jameis has that ability. But the one thing Jameis is going to have to do, as you mentioned, is elevate his play to that elite status, because you can talk and you can lead. But just like we talk about with head coaches when they come in the league and they want to change this, you got to have a resume a little bit. And Jameis is going to have to back that up, because eventually, if Jameis is mediocre, which I'm not saying that he is now, I think he's certainly above mediocre. He's a very good quarterback, but he's not elite yet. You know, that message will get lost eventually unless, you know, he does elevate his play. Trevor.
Wait, sorry, what?
Your thoughts?
On Jameis?
On what you saw from Hard Knocks and Jameis's leadership.
No, I love the quote. The quote about Cepho was my favorite quote of the episode. When Cepho says to him, like, hey, like, it's not that serious. Like, it's one practice rep. Like, you don't have to get on. And he just immediately was like, no, like, it is.
Right.
Like, it is.
That is the culture change right there.
Like,
that's the mentality.
I've been at Florida State. I've competed for national championships. I've played against the best. Like,
I've lost one game in 2 years.
What Jameis said in that moment was, I'm not a loser.
Right.
I'm not going to lose.
Right.
Yeah.
Whether it's a practice rep, a game, a
Jameis doesn't
practice,
like losing ping pong
game,
in the locker room.
That's right. Exactly. And I think,
you know, the interesting,
we saw that too before the Jags game when they did his like pregame speech.
Yes.
I mean, he was saying to him, like, man, this is a preseason game.
Yeah.
They don't really matter. And he was saying, like, don't you dare give yourself a chance to say, I wish I could have done this in the game.
Right.
Like, we're talking about a game that, I mean, it's lessons and it's good stuff for the backup guys, but like, he's yelling at the starters.
Yes.
He's wanting to win the dang game.
He is. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, that was my thoughts about that. I thought the episode was great, and I think they're doing a great job of highlighting Jameis as a leader.
Interesting thing about Cepho, like, that quote didn't. And he's a rookie, so he part of it is ignorance. He doesn't know any better. But for him to kind of say that, and then in the previous episode, he's like, you know, well, like, when can they cut you?
Can they get cut?
Yeah. Can they cut you after the season starts? Like, yeah, Cepho, they can cut you at any time. You know, it just kind of – that's not quarterback-esque for me.
Oh, no.
In terms of an NFL quarterback mindset or mentality. Mm-hmm. It shows you how much Cepho has got to learn and grow. But it also kind of speaks to, there's some ignorance there that I don't know if I want on my football team. I'm not taking a personal shot at Cepho, but just for me, you know, I can only go by what his words were and what caused him to say that. And it just lacks, it's a stark contrast to Jameis Winston is really what it is. It doesn't seem to jive and mesh with what Jameis is preaching.
But, man, that's a tough comparison, though. I mean – That's like, you know, yeah, my riding ability versus Trevor's.
No, no, no.
It's a tough comparison.
Riley Bulla has that. Riley Bulla's got that. Yeah. Riley Bulla may not make the – yeah,
but it's got to be
genuine. Riley may not make the team.
It's got to be genuine, though.
I think it's genuine
with Riley. No, and I know it is with Jameis, and it's genuine with Riley. I'm saying you're saying any – he's saying anybody can have that. No, that's not DeMar Dotson. That's not –
anybody can have that.
Right.
But is it part of their makeup?
Not everybody does have
that. Correct.
Right.
But, yeah, Riley –
that's what makes Jameis special, right?
May or may not make this team.
That's the point I'm trying to make. Right. Yeah. That's what makes Jameis Winston special, because there are guys who can throw a prettier ball, who can throw a ball farther, who has a stronger arm and all of these things. But, you know, it's those intangibles. That was the difference, as Scott said, when you evaluated Mariota and Jameis Winston. Those are the things that the alpha male, rah-rah, I like a tough son of a bitch quarterback, Jason Light loved about him. And that doesn't mean that Marcus Mariota doesn't finish his career with better records or more Super Bowl wins. But for this team, it was the perfect choice.
Yeah. You know,
I'm with you.
We saw the mistake Jameis made. We're not going to harp on that.
That was the best part of Hard Knocks because
it was
Trevor
great.
And I were in the press box saying, we cannot
you
wait.
You looked at me and you said, I can't wait to see Hard Knocks for that.
Yeah.
I think it didn't disappoint.
I think Dirk Cutter said it all. I mean, there's nothing we could say that would outdo what Dirk said. That was awesome.
My favorite part was like, you can't do that. And then he goes,
Ever.
You
it's like he was talking to his teenage son.
Can you relate to that?
Yeah,
my favorite part about that was when Cutter used the word greed.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that is such
that was a dagger
that
to Jameis.
That is such a different word than you hear, you hear the talk all the time, we don't want you to lose the game for us. You know, don't put us in a bad position. Don't do this. He looked at Jameis and
said, that's one of the seven deadly sins, isn't it?
Your greed.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Your greed got in the way of that.
Right.
Yep.
And and Jameis kept saying afterwards, he's like, I got you, coach. Like, my bad.
That was the dagger right there.
You're greedy is not a my bad thing. That is a dang.
Yep.
I blew it. So that was my favorite part of that.
That's the difference between when your mom would yell at you and then your dad would come home and yell at you. Your mom could yell at you all you want, but when dad, there's certain things that dad could say to you, you know, and when your dad was disappointed in you, it hurt. And you could tell that stung a little bit to Jameis. And I think that's exactly how Dirk Cutter should have handled that situation.
You know, the Jacksonville game, we talked about it a little bit. We're not going to harp on it too much. We'll get ahead to the Cleveland game here. But, you know, we talked about the Bucs wanting to do two things in that game. Run the football, which they did, much better than they did against Cincinnati, and stop the run, which they did. Jacksonville rushed for over 200 yards in their preseason opener. Granted, Fournette didn't play, but the Buccaneers stifled the Jaguars' running game. I mean, 1 yard and seven carries in the first half was stunning. But, you know, as good as Mike Smith's defense looked, we have to be a little critical because I know Smith is thinking the same thing. What makes a great defense are the splash plays, takeaways, and sacks. Those are the type of things that truly make a defense great and dominant. And I think that this team has the makings of that. But what we haven't seen for the first two preseason games is a sack by any defensive starter outside of Levante David on a blitz. We haven't seen, and Gerald came close, but we haven't seen this defensive line come home yet. Mm-hmm. And the Bengals' offensive line was okay. They're a decent group. The Jaguars' offensive line, not so good.
Right.
And so it'll be interesting to see when the Browns come to town. Their offensive line has been completely revamped. Yeah. This is not the same group that gave up 8 sacks in the preseason last year to the Buccaneers in this very same game, week 3.
Sacks?
8 sacks.
Oh, my goodness.
I had 3 of them.
I didn't remember that.
From
Did
the
you
press
really?
Box, yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, it was a good night for you.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. One of my better nights in the league.
And at the same time, RG3 wasn't the quarterback.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I thought y'all said snacks.
No, sacks.
Okay. Oh, sacks. No, I didn't get any sacks.
Yeah,
my bad.
Sacks.
Sorry,
yeah,
I'm good.
Yeah. And so I want to see if this defense, the starting defense, especially the defensive line, can get home. Mm-hmm. Because there's going to be instances where the Bucs are going to rush 4 and they're going to have to get somebody home.
Let me ask
without blitzing.
I agree. But if you can shut out every team in the first half all season long and not get any sacks, I think Mike Smith would take that, right? Because they were all over.
Oh, yes.
They were all over Bortles. Don't get me wrong. But you're right. That's not going to happen. That's an unrealistic expectation. And I know fans like to say, not fans, and coaches like to say it more than fans, disruption. And absolutely those things are important. You're not going to sack Drew Brees that often because he's going to get rid of the ball.
But there's a big difference between 3rd and 6 and 3rd and 16.
That's right. That's right.
There really is
a huge difference, and a lot of times those sacks can turn into turnovers, and it breaks the will of the other team and the quarterback and things like that. So, and plus, it gets the nothing gets the crowd more fired up than, you know, a third down blindside, you know, sack from
Look at the Seahawks game. I mean, the Bucs jump out 14-0, and then their offense basically went to sleep.
Yep.
And the defense comes in and sacks Russell Wilson five times. They go 1 of 11, I think, on third downs, and you know, and they won that game.
They also had a big turnover in that game.
They did.
You know, and as you mentioned, splash plays.
They've had one takeaway on defense in two preseason games, and that was Vernon Hargrave's interception right there by the goal line against the Bengals.
After the Bengals marched down the field pretty easily.
So those are two things I'm really looking forward to from this defense is getting to DeShone Kizer, getting him on the ground, and also getting some takeaways. And against a rookie quarterback in his first start, and this is a guy that, you know, has looked impressive. He's got a one touchdown running, one touchdown passing, 61% completion percentage. You can see why he was a high draft pick. But it's time for this Bucs defense to get back to the days of old when they were dominant, when you and I were watching them, Mark, and, and you too, Trevor, when they would eat rookie quarterbacks up for lunch.
Yeah, I mean, that would be, I remember a young Achilles Smith in Cincinnati, and the Buccaneers shut them out. I mean, Warren Sapp feasted on that guy all day long. And, you know, those were the things that made these defensive linemen salivate back in the day. And that's the way it's got to get back here. I think we all agree there's talent there. I don't know that there's going to be, you know, a guy with 12 sacks, another guy with 10, another guy with 9. But there's enough talent that, you know, there's going to be – they should be able to eclipse last year's sack mark, which was, what, 38 or 40? What did they end up with last year?
I think 38, I believe.
And which was a couple better than the year before.
Right.
You know, that 40 sack mark as a team is kind of, you know, the standard of where you need to be if you're a pretty good defense. But this defense –
if you're a playoff team, too.
Right.
History has shown that in almost every year that the Bucs have gotten 40 sacks,
they've been in the playoffs. Yeah. No question. Like, we talk disruption all we want, and like you just said, it's a good thing, but you gotta if you're a playoff team, you have to be good enough to get to the quarterback. So
You know, something we've talked about, the success of this team is the health of this football team, and there's no question about it. This team is deeper than it's been in years past for a long time. I can't remember. I could even venture to guess how long it's been since they've been this deep. I mean, again, when you're drafting guys and you're not counting on them to come in and make immediate impacts, a guy like Justin Evans doesn't have to come in and start at safety, and Chris Godwin at receiver.
It's pretty good because he's a second-round pick.
And even O.J. Howard to a degree, all right? It's not like this team didn't have a tight end on the roster and couldn't believe he fell in his lap, and now we've got a pass-receiving, dual-threat, blocking-type tight end. They've got Cameron Brate on this roster. But injuries still, this team has to stay healthy. They're still not as deep as they want to be at every position. And really, in the age of the salary cap, I think that's something Jason Light, or maybe it was Mark Dominic, told us, Scott. You know, you've got to get lucky a little bit because you can't be two or three man deep at every position on your football team. And this team is starting to get nicked up a little bit. They've stayed fairly healthy through camp, but we've seen Mike Evans take a couple days off. Quan Alexander probably isn't going to play. Brett Grimes, although he was back practicing today, I don't know that I would put him in the game. You know, does Brett need to get out there?
So I don't think they're going
to. Yeah, I don't think he plays.
Well, I think he's just bored.
Yeah. The interesting thing will be.
Yeah.
I really do. He was on the sideline last couple of days.
Do you remember in Jacksonville? Bored. He was out in the middle of the field with Coach Smith.
I think he's bored.
He wanted to be. Yeah, I like that about Brett Grimes. People can say what they want about Miko. Yep. I don't care about her. This guy loves freaking football.
Well, and the great thing is he is getting up there in age. And sometimes those guys, once they're in their mid-30s, they kind of check out. They look for reasons not to practice. Mm-hmm. You know, not that they're collecting a check, but they're kind of living for Sunday. But Brent Grimes is a guy that lives for practice.
I've been more impressed with him this year in practice than I was last year. Last year, I remember I thought, wouldn't say it was Daquan Bowers where he would take reps off, but he wasn't first in line. I've seen a lot more of that from Brent Grimes this year. And I don't know if it's because he realizes, you know, he thinks he can play another 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years. But, you know, Gerald talks about it sometimes, and even some of the older players that we've talked to that have playoff experience, you never know when you're going to have that opportunity again. And that was kind of Gerald's message last year when they were in that playoff run. We don't know if we're going to be in that position to be in a playoff run this year. A guy like Brett Grimes doesn't know how many more years he has in the league, so maybe that's a little bit to do with it too. But he stayed very, very active during this injury situation. By the way, we're working on a Chris Baker dance lessons for Pewter Report readers. I'm not sure if we're going to get that lined up or not, but we will make sure to let people know.
Him dancing with the tree.
That's indecent exposure. He could have been arrested by Jacksonville cops.
I was nearly in tears.
Well, you have to wonder about like some of the tree huggers out there, the environmentalists, you know, if they were really offended by that.
Yes, that's true. They were. I mean, they he probably was hugging a tree. Happy.
Yeah, and well, doing some other. I mean,
I was going to say. I mean, like, if you're an environmentalist, you might want to consider some sexual assault charges to that tree.
That tree.
Not that I care. I don't care.
The tree
at all.
Against the tree or against Baker?
Well, if you're an environmentalist, it would be against Baker.
The tree absolutely enjoyed it. You could tell by its body language; it was enjoying the dance.
I think so.
Baker.
Yeah.
Anyway, were we out on time? We doing all right?
We got
on
about
time?
10 minutes.
Yeah, we got 10 minutes.
Oh, good. All right.
Here's another thing that I want to see too is, and I talked to DeMar Dotson and Kevin Pamphill about this. You know, this particular week, it's going to be my Fab Five, is this team, if they want to be a playoff team, they've got to score touchdowns this year, especially in the red zone. We've seen them put in a lot of work, and we've seen some misfires in the red zone, Jameis throwing the almost interception.
Right.
We've seen, you know, Mike Evans and Jameis not connect twice in the red zone down there by you know, in the first drive of the Bengals.
This first team offense has moved the ball
at
will for the most part. I think Brian Anger has had 2 first-half punts in 2 preseason games, something like that.
Yeah. The play design is so beautiful, and I've done 2 cover 3s now. Second one just came out. You should go read it. And I've just been so impressed with – we talked about them getting the weapons here, but you still have to do something with them. You know, you can't just be like, all right, well, you got Jackson. Just, you know, go run or something.
Right.
You know, and they have put Winston – in such good situations to where he can trust his 2 guys on the outside, but then they have Humphreys, Howard, Brate in the middle where it's like one of them's going to be open. The ball is going to move.
Right.
And that's the thing is like so many of these offensive plays, Jameis can afford to be patient with the 2 guys on the outside, Evan and Jackson,
right.
Because no matter what, it's almost like he could the ball can always be moving up the field because he has so many good matches in the middle. So
right.
I've been really impressed with the play calling so far because you're right. The offense, even efficiency-wise, they're on a roll.
And against the Browns, it's going to be tested a little bit because we've had some injuries to the offensive line.
Yeah.
DeMar Dotson's not going to play. He is going to be he's going to be out probably for this game. Well, and certainly for the preseason. He'll be
Boy,
there week
how
one.
Convenient, DeMar.
Yeah.
Same groin injury he had last year right before the 3rd preseason game.
Yeah.
Veteran move.
Just got word that the J.R. Sweezy will play this
Good.
Week. So,
Good. You know, J.R. didn't
been,
practice
He's been
on
out the
Wednesday.
Last 2, yeah. He's yeah. been out the last 2 days.
So he'll play, but you will see Evan Smith at left guard. You'll see Kevin Pamphill out there at right tackle.
And I like that because Kevin filled in for DeMar last year in a game. I don't remember. Which game was that? Do you
it was
remember?
The Saints game.
Because it definitely
they lost, but he played well.
It definitely wasn't the Cowboys game.
Yeah, it could have used him there.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that. I like Kevin there.
It's going to be a good move for Kevin, too, because he's in a contract year. And this is a guy that really can be, I believe, a starter at right tackle in this league and a starter at guard.
Yeah.
That he has the ability to truly be a starter
they're
at a
Yeah, they're
positions.
Confident enough in him, it seems.
I don't know. The Bucs are going to be able to afford this guy. They're going to have to prioritize because there's some free agent decisions they're going to have to make because Mike Evans will get paid.
Yeah.
Jameis Winston
but
soon will get paid.
It doesn't sound like that contract extension is coming from what we know.
No. Just talking to a few people, it doesn't seem like it's, you know, imminent. The good news
I
is.
I think the Bucs would like for it to be.
They would love for it to be. They would love to it get it done. But they're not gonna, you know, they're not gonna force it either.
I mean, it's,
the good news is both sides are okay with it not being done
right
now. It's not like Mike Evans is mad or there's any frustration on his end.
I mean,
because,
if I'm him, I'm waiting for OBJ to sign.
Well,
Odell Beckham's gonna get a stupid amount of money.
And from what we understand, that's not gonna happen during the season this year. The Giants are not gonna do that. So
especially because of the money he's demanding.
Right.
Well,
and once the season starts, rarely do you see those contracts.
Right,
if it's gonna happen, you would like to think that it's gonna happen.
And keep in mind for both of these players, they're first round draft picks, OBJ and Mike Evans.
Mm-hmm.
So you can fit your option. The club has the option for that.
And they already have with Mike Evans, they've already picked that up. So I mean they're Mike Evans is here next year regardless
now
of what
he
happens.
Might I'm not
next year's when if I'm a player I may hold out, I may say it's time to get this done you know because the $7 million he's going to make on that last year option I think it's roughly around 7 is you know more than half less of what he's going to get you know if they
renew
that
with an extension exactly
because you got to figure he's going to be an 18 he might approach $20 million what do you think
Odell said he wants 30.
I think Mike Evans.
Which is, I know, ridiculous, but
I think,
even if he gets above 20. that changes the landscape for all wide receivers.
Well, somebody told me the other night in Jacksonville, all it takes is one team to pay crazy money.
That's
And the domino effect happens.
Gerald McCoy came close. Mike Evans will be the first $100 million contract Buccaneer.
Wow.
And Jameis Winston will be the second $100 million-plus contract.
And Keith Tandy will be the third.
I don't think Keith is going to get quite that much, although he's in a contract year, too.
When I talked to Chris Conte last week, or I don't know when it was, I've already forgotten, about Ryan Tannehill, you know, the Buccaneers facing him in potentially week one and how he had retired. And I asked
Chris.
You mean
Jay Cutler?
Yeah, Jay Cutler, that one.
Who's replacing Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, sorry. And of course, Chris and Jay are friends. And he said, you know,
I don't know about that anymore. Chris picked him. He pick-sixed him.
And told Chicago to FU.
Right.
But no, he has a lot of respect for Jay and says he's a good quarterback. He also said, I said, well, you know, when you hang it up, are you done? I mean, will you ever come out of retirement, a one-year deal? He goes, no. When I'm done, I'm done. He goes, although for $10 million.
I was going to say, yeah.
He said, I've never seen anything close to $10 million. Right. So he said, I'm pretty sure I could swing back out on the field for a one-year $10 million deal.
Yeah. We talked about Mike Evans, Trevor. It's funny because you and I were talking yesterday after watching practice. Mm-hmm. Chris Godwin's been a little quiet. He started off camp and just was gangbusters.
On fire.
Made me on fire. Even write the
he
fact
was hive.
That
no,
Chris Godwin.
There was a hive about him.
This could be the Chris Godwin show in August for the preseason. We haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
He's got a couple
of
catches.
Right.
But looks like he's going to get the start for Mike Evans on Saturday against the Browns. So it very well could turn into the Chris Godwin show over these next 2 weeks.
And he looked
tremendous
today.
He
got the start for Mike Evans today, like you just said, and had a beautiful one-handed catch in the corner of the end zone, very Mike Evans-esque.
Yes.
Had a fantastic leaping catch over the middle. So it's just like, man, he started off real hot. Then over the last couple of weeks, we're kind of like, what happened to him? Are they hiding him? What are they doing here? But he reminded us today that whenever they choose to use him, he will be ready, and he can do whatever they want. So.
Well, we certainly appreciate everybody listening to the latest edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. Make sure you download the podcast, subscribe to it on all the major podcast platforms. Also, share this thing on social media. Let people know about it. Help us grow this thing. It's growing. This twice-a-week thing is really helping as well.
I like the twice-a-week thing. It keeps me fresh on the Buccaneers.
Well, Uncle Stan, I know that you're semi-retired, so being able to listen to two podcasts a week certainly wets your whistle. I don't know what that means. That sounds like something that a old guy would say, right? Wet your whistle.
Yeah.
Anyway, we certainly appreciate people listening. We'll have another podcast following the game on Saturday night. From what I understand, there's a couple tickets available for that game if you want to go see a preseason game. But if you are going to go to a preseason game.
It's not sold out?
This is the this is
preseason
the one that you want to go to.
People are
going to
be watching the McGregor fight.
By the way, Trevor, tomorrow you get to go tour the new Raymond James Stadium, all the renovations.
The West
We're doing
Club.
That at 1 o'clock tomorrow.
Yeah,
are we doing that?
Social media.
No,
that.
What I'm saying is you get to do that. No, not weird, but I'm telling you, I'm saying you get to do that.
I get
the
pleasure
low man
of doing
on the total
that.
Goal. It actually
for
is
for the Twitter account. Is what you're saying.
It actually is pretty neat. I went last year when they did the other West the clubs. There could be potentially food there.
Okay,
could be potentially.
What you mean,
hors
d'oeuvre, right?
Yeah, hors d'oeuvre.
Yeah, a lot of hors d'oeuvres. But the best. The cool thing about the best part of this renovation, because I don't care about the club level stuff, the locker rooms. The biggest mistake they made when they built that stadium.
Gosh,
that was the worst locker rooms. And Rick Stroud and I were talking about Jacksonville the other day. We had no idea what was on the other side of the wall. See, the locker room is going to be directly from where it is now,
right,
but across that walkway.
Yeah.
We had no idea they had hundreds of thousands of square feet available and why they didn't use that initially, but that's going to be unveiled on Wednesday. It's ready to go. And you don't even have to wear a hard hat like I did when I went last year. So I don't know that you could tuck your man bun under a hard hat, but
I'm doing it with this hat. So
tomorrow you can do that. So anyway, we'll have some coverage of that. One more day of training camp tomorrow. That would be Thursday. Make sure you check it out.
Last
of course,
day of training
the
camp,
Fab
right?
Five on Friday. Saturday is game day. Of course, all of our post-game coverage Saturday night into Sunday morning. And fellas, we're getting close to September 10th. It's happening before we know it.
Excited.
Yeah, this is going to be an exciting season.
It is.
It's
going to be
really
real fun.
It's going to be interesting because, you know, I started in 1995 right when Sapp and Brooks were drafted. And so I kind of saw the rise of the Buccaneers and then the fall, unfortunately, and it's been a valley for a while.
And
but
then
now,
the rise back during the Greg Schiano years.
Well, not quite.
Well, I meant
that
Lovie
was still
Smith
part of
years.
The valley.
No, the rise of the Lovie Smith years.
No, that was like part of the deltas, the real low part of the valley, like the underwater part.
We can say one thing to Lovie Smith. Thank you for Jameis Winston, if you're a Buccaneer fan.
Thank you for Dirk Cutter.
That's true. Brought Dirk Cutter aboard and drafted Jameis Winston after going 2-14.
We should put him in the Ring of Honor.
Just for that, because he, you could say that he has.
It all started with Lovie.
It may be
the
may
godfather
be,
of right. this next era.
Right, absolutely. Anyway, we'll be back later after the preseason game against the Cleveland Browns with another podcast. I am Mark Cook for Trevor Sickleman, Scott Reynolds, and we'll see you then.